Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Mark Riley.
And I'm Rob Hughes.
And you're listening to the A to Z of David Bowie,
the greatest rock and roll star in the world, ever,
ever.
Okay, Bob, so where are we going to this time?
Well, Mark, F is for foot stomping.
And fame.
And fame.
Of course, you know, joined at the hip, lest we forget. So, Foot Stomping, it was originally a 1961 single by The Flares, and that was a band that included Richard Berry in the lineup, and he's best known for writing Louie Louie.
Yeah.
Now, he's best known for writing Louie Louie. I just wonder if he got the full writing credit, because if he did, then, I mean, can you imagine how much that is worth? How many people have covered that?
Well, it is the most covered song, isn't it? It's the garage anthem. Any band worth their salt would start off doing Louie Louie. I think there was a problem with the sort of composition credits of that, weren't there? A lot of people claim credit for that.
Yeah, a lot of people did it and put the names on it and stuff, as I remember. But, also, a lot of bands who couldn't really play did it as
That's
well,
because
it's only three chords, isn't it?
Yeah, it's dead
so
simple.
So most of the bands, even the punk bands that I used to go and see, a lot of them would do it just because you learn three chords, literally. You do Louie Louie.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, Richard Berry within the lineup, early incarnation formed 1952. There were various lined up over the years, weren't there?
Yeah, there were. So in 1958, a depleted Flares joined up with another splintered group called the Cadets, one of whom was a guy called Aaron Collins. The Cadets' biggest hit happened in 1956, didn't it? This was Stranded in the Jungle, which achieved a kind of post-fame later on when New York Dolls covered it.
Yeah, one of my favourite New York Dolls songs, and it's not there. So 1961, Foot Stomping Part 1 was released, and it made the top 20 in the Black Singles Chart, number 25 in the Billboard Top 100, so did very well.
Yeah, so you're wondering, what's this all got to do with David Bowie, you might think?
Well, forward to 1974, the second of November, David Bowie's invited onto the American TV show hosted by Dick Cavett, isn't he?
This is a really famous appearance. And we have talked about this in one of the other podcasts, but Bowie isn't in the best shape. He looks emaciated, doesn't he? But at the same time, he's in fantastic form. He's playing some live tunes on there, just an amazing version of 1984. Then he does Young Americans. The interview itself with Dick Cavett is a strange one.
It's previously discussed.
Yeah, a little bit Car Crash TV. And then to close the show, he does Foot Stomping, which is just incredibly thrilling, isn't it? It's just a wonderful piece of TV.
It's a brilliant thing to watch, because not only, Bowie's really strutting his stuff, but also Ava Cherry's dancing around the stage, not singing so much. He's got the backing singers with him, including War and Peace, you know, Jeff McCormack. And it is just a really great, great piece of TV, isn't it?
It is. It's absolutely wonderful. So the story from that then kind of tells that the riff that Carlos Alomar, the guitar player, worked for it, was thought by Bowie to be too good to be used on to be wasted, really, on a cover version.
And he was right.
Yeah, he was right. So they decided to work it up into a song, and they booked time at the Electric Lady Studios in New York at the very beginning of 1975.
Okay, so you need to picture the time, really, because Young Americans, or Gouster, that had been recorded at Sigma Sound in Philadelphia, and to all intents and purposes, the album was finished. As we know, Tony Visconti took the tapes, I think, back to London to mix them. But then when Bowie got to New York, he just had some other ideas, didn't he? And he'd become good friends with John Lennon.
Yeah.
And so they decided to go into the studio. He'd take his band with Carlos Alomar, those guys, in to play with him. And you know, probably a little homage and a little kind of a doff of the old cap to
Definitely.
John Lennon doing Across the Universe.
Yes.
Which kind of seemed a little bit pointless in the whole realms of Young Americans, but never mind about
that. Well, you know, he's paying his dues, as you say. But at the same time, they have a go at sort of working up this riff of Alomar's, which is still a little bit kind of shapeless song-wise. And then as it goes along, John Lennon kept singing the words aim, aim over and over again, which obviously just doesn't mean anything at all. And so Bowie kind of takes it into, well, changes it to Fame.
Well, he does. And also, I mean, if you think about it, there is a great irony within the song Fame, but it was a barbed kind of sideswipe at the main man management company who he'd fallen out with, and he will get mentioned quite often throughout the whole podcast, but he wasn't happy. Financially, he wasn't sound.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of anger in him. Yeah. I mean, he did say it himself, didn't he? He just said, you know, a lot of the anger that was within him came out in that song.
Yeah. I mean, talking about the song later, Bowie said he called it nasty, ugly, said it was written with a degree of malice, and was his least favourite song on the album.
Yeah, the weird thing is that it was a number one in America, which of course brought about it more fame.
Absolutely.
And of fame, Bowie did say, famously, that, you know, the only thing it was good for was getting you a seat in a restaurant.
Also said it didn't really strike him as being the ideal choice for a single, which seems crazy now. It just seemed perfect for a single. And he sang it on TV shows in the States like Soul Train, where he wasn't quite himself, but it's still a great mime performance.
The A to Z of David Bowie with Rob Hughes and Mark Riley.
F is for Susie Fussy, or Ronson, if you like.
That's right. Born a few years after the Second World War, so it's all a bit sketchy, her beginnings, in Bromley, Kent.
Well, I couldn't find an actual date for her. I mean, I didn't trawl for forever. And to be honest, I mean, I could probably have asked Lisa Ronson,
yes,
who we'll talk about a little bit later on. But I thought, no, just be vague, Mark. That's what people expect anyway.
Vague is fine. Nothing wrong with vague. So by the age of 15, she enrolls in the Evelyn Paget,
I would imagine, with it being in Bromley, but... if it had been in Gay Paris, maybe. You could be right, Bob. I can't say 100%, but I would have said Paget.
That's fine. I'm going to say Paget. I'm just very presumptuous of it. Anyway, the College of Hair and Beauty, as you say, in Bromley. She wasn't particularly desperate to be a hairdresser, but at the same time, she wasn't really qualified to chase a dream job. So it sounds like she just made do with this, you know?
She was obviously good at it, though, because she ended up in Elizabeth Paget's flagship salon in Beckenham. but he was whilst working here, obviously a proper member of the team and everything.
Yes.
But she met Peggy Jones, and now she had a regular shampoo and set, 2:45 every Thursday afternoon, maybe even a trim, or occasionally, get this, Bob, I know that you will be longing for this now, a chocolate rinse.
Oh, I can't believe it. It's the first time I've heard that phrase. Well, certainly in hairdressing terms, Mark.
Well, anyway, you don't go to the hairdressers very often, do you? No. You do your own like I do.
That's what your wife does it. But anyway, so obviously while she's sat there, you get talking, don't you? Where are you going this year for your holiday? What have you been up to? You know, the subject of Peggy's son often came up while they were talking. And she'd say, you know, he's a singer in a band. She'd say, oh, you know, he's a very artistic child, which isn't, you know, that's quite common, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you can imagine, can't you? That he's what's going on with you? Oh, well, yeah, my son's very artistic, you know. Oh, is he really? Oh, yes, he's been in theatre and also. Oh,
yeah,
is that right? But then the title of a song called Space Oddity came up, and it all came home to roost for Susie Fussy, didn't it? And she recognised that she was indeed talking about David Bowie.
Yeah, and she then really, you know, puts two and two together. Yeah, I've seen Bowie walking down Beckenham High Street with Angie, soon to be wife.
Right.
And then one day, of course, Bowie's mum brought Angie into the salon and she and Angie hit it off. This is Susie and Angie, of course. Get towards Christmas now, 1971. Angie wanted a hair cutting, but there were no slots left at the salon. So what do? Well, you go to somebody's house, don't you? That's what you did.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know, because it's not my realm, not hairdressing or doing foreigners. But that was the phrase, wasn't it? I don't know how that's considered these days,
yeah,
but it used to be called doing a foreigner. So if you were a builder and you went away at the weekend and you did work for yourself and didn't tell the boss it was called a foreigner. And that's what this was, in effect, wasn't it? So she went off to Haddon Hall.
That's right.
To cut the hair because he couldn't find a slot for her within the book, the booking book.
Absolutely. So entirely natural. So when she gets there, Bowie and Angie are discussing whether or not you should cut off his long flowing locks. Of course, you know, you think about the cover of Hunky Dory when he's doing his favourite, you know, his famous Greta Garbo pose there. His wonderful, long, lustrous hair. He doesn't want that anymore. He wants to have it all shorn off.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's other reasons for him having his hair cut for further down the line.
Mm.
But also, if you think of all of the photographs of him at Haddon Hall, there's loads of them with that. He's often wearing that big hat, isn't he? And the white blouse and the Oxford bags. And the long hair was a big part of his image, wasn't it?
So Susie Ganny, being a hairdresser, of course, offers her pennies worth. Nobody has short hair. She says, you'll be the first one. So Bowie then shows her, this is a famous photograph on there from Vogue magazine, of a woman with very bright red spiky hair, and said, look, Do you think you could do that for me?
Yeah, and they've actually got that magazine in the David Bowie Is exhibition, so I have seen it. I don't even know if it was Angie who introduced Bowie to that originally. That is one story that's flying about, but who knows? Probably only the two of them were in the room. I mean, Susie was a bit surprised that he was asking for a woman's hairdo at that point in time, but get used to it.
Well, it was a challenge.
You know, I mean, and that was it. So she thought it would be a challenge,
yes,
but she'd go for it. So 30 minutes later, it was cut, but it was limp. Now all this is so great, not spiky.
No.
So she hoped and prayed that putting a tint on it would help it stand up. Now, she said Schwarzkopf Red Hot Red with 30 volume peroxide was what she used. That's being very specific. Mm. But that combined with an anti-dandruff treatment called Guard. She said that did the job. It set like stone.
Oh. I'm sure it would.
You know when you see people whose hair just doesn't move and you think, how do you get that? But I remember at the time, you know, I mean, I never went anywhere near it. I wasn't that adventurous, pretty shy kind of a creature.
Mm. Yes.
But there were a few kids around our way who had the Bowie cut.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and some of them pulled it off really well. Yeah. I was so jealous.
Oh, so anyway, so Bowie and Angie kind of loved it. £2, not bad at all.
It's
you know, defines an era here. So the week after that, Susie gets a call from Angie inviting her over to one of the early Ziggy shows, and she loves it. Soon after, she gets offered a job by Main Man Management, and she's becoming Bowie and the Spiders' personal hairdresser, which must have seemed like a dream job at that point.
Yeah, being taken off the high street and then even just touring Britain and, you know, and stopping in hotels, all very glamorous. But she turned Woody Woodmansey blonde, she turned Trevor Boulder's sideburn silver, and she tried to turn Mick Ronson into something else, but he wouldn't have any of it, which again is a thread emerging throughout a lot of these different podcasts, whereby Mick Ronson was the least willing to take on board the glam attitude, wasn't he?
But he seemed the most perfect for it. That's the thing, isn't it? It's a crazy thing.
It did him no harm. I mean, again, we'll get to it in the Mick Ronson bit, but when he realised that the girls did actually like what the other guys were doing, they thought, right, okay, well, I'll give it a go.
Exactly. So the Ziggy cut is all the rage around Britain, and she becomes a really important, kind of an integral member of Bowie's touring party, not only kind of cutting his hair and for the rest of the band, but helping with all the costume changes. She would wait in the wings, apparently, with a glass of red wine and a ciggy when Ronson was doing his, you know, famous guitar solos, and Bowie would just kind of take it from her.
It was a glamorous life, keeping Davy Bowie glamorous, best hotels, travelling the world eventually, met all the other rock stars. But if you look at the photographs, and there's plenty of them, let's face it, of Davy Bowie backstage getting changed from one costume to another, it's always Susie with him.
There's
quite often another woman there as well, who I don't know the identity of. She was omnipresent, wasn't she?
Absolutely. And of course, by the end of the final Ziggy tour, final Ziggy show, which we'll get to shortly, she's fallen in love with Mick Ronson completely, and she moves to London with him.
Yes.
And they have a daughter, Lisa Ronson.
Absolutely, Lisa Ronson. I've met Lisa on a couple of occasions, and she's so great. I saw her performing with Holy Holy, and she's a very, very talented and brilliant lady. But a quote from Susie, she said, "I am so grateful to David. He took a chance on me. My haircut is on British currency now, the Brixton £10 note. Now, who would have thought I could have done that?" So, and I did meet Susie as well in the company of Lisa, just briefly in Hull at the Holy Holy gig.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
The A to Z of David Bowie with Mark Riley and Rob Hughes.
F is also for Freddie Barrette.
Yeah, born Frederick Barrette in Hackney, 1951. Died in Paris, May 2001, aged just 49. But he is the fashion designer who, at only 20 years of age, he's credited by Bowie as the ultimate co-shaper of the Ziggy look.
Yeah, so he was working for a Greek tailor on the King's Road in the late 60s, and he met Bowie in the El Sombrero Club, which is a gay disco in London.
Yeah.
And in the company of Bowie as well, and Angie Bowie, rather. And she did say, first of all, you have no idea how handsome this man was. David spotted him at the Sombrero. He was wearing white spandex hot pants with a navy blue sailor's trim and a sailor shirt.
Whoa.
He looked totally Scandinavian. Well, he doesn't sound it. I see where she's going. With high cheekbones and lots of blonde hair. But he was tall and had big hands and feet, speaking of his artistry and physical stamina.
Absolutely.
Whoa, down, Shep. So every night he made new clothes to wear. He was so brilliant. He worked for a Greek tailor in the King's Road and he had a machine at home, so he did work there too. Once we met and got to know each other, I brought him down to live at Haddon Hall because it was easier for him to have everyone available for fittings, etc. Before they went off on tour, he came for the weekend and stayed for a couple of months, and then Freddie and Daniela, his girlfriend, came with us to New York. Another gift of an invitation for somebody in the art, somebody creative, to hook up with David Bowie.
Absolutely. So Barrette inspired Bowie to put in one of his early bands. We talked about Arnold Korn's one of the other podcast episodes, which he went by the pseudonym Rudy Valentino in this band. And Bowie had said he hoped to turn Barrette into the next Mick Jagger. You've got to say this was tongue-in-cheek because, you know, as we've discussed, the Arnold Korn's thing was really a front for Bowie to get his new material over, and a bit of a sort of a way of kind of like a sort of screen from his record company, so he didn't really know what he was up to.
Maybe, but I mean, if it had have happened that Andy said, well, I said I was going to turn you into the next Mick Jagger, he might have been brilliant, but as we've covered before, he couldn't sing.
Yeah.
Which was a flaw.
But that, well, there is, it is certainly a flaw as a frontman. Instead, though, never mind all that, he becomes Bowie's sartorial advisor. Skills very much in evidence, we'll get to in a little bit, but certainly, you know, things that you think about the Life on Mars video and that wonderful ice blue satin suit that Bowie wore, that's designed by Freddie Barrette. Liberties of London was like the place he'd go to. So he'd come up with that incredible quilted jumpsuit that Bowie wore on top of the Pops and Old Grey Whistle Test, which is like, for me, it's just the quintessential Ziggy outfit.
That's completely iconic, isn't it? And I don't know if I've mentioned it before, probably have. I probably mention it every day in my life, but yeah, you go to the David Bowie Years exhibition, and that was like the second costume that you saw, as I remember, and I was looking at it, completely lost in it, completely in awe of it, and then I looked around and there's a small plaque with a quote from me on it, and that was when I thought, well, like, you have arrived now, Mark, that's the end of it. But that one in particular, that quilted suit, to see that was something else.
It's incredible. Inspired by Clockwork Orange, of course, wasn't it? So Bowie, you know, been to see that, and he had something vague in his mind about something similar to the droogie overalls that they wore in the film, but in exotic colours. That's just something a little bit different, printed fabric rather than just something plain.
And nobody else was wearing anything like that, were they? I mean, if anybody was getting a little bit glam, it would normally be silk, wouldn't it? And if you look at, like, The Suite doing the Blockbuster or whatever, you know, which is obviously a bit further down the line, but all their gear was just kind of flimsy silk stuff, which you could see somebody running up quite easily.
Yeah.
But to choose that kind of material and having somebody like Barrette doing it and going to, like, you know, the Cypriot markets and all that kind of stuff, a league apart.
Absolutely. As you say, so Barrette would go to the Cypriot street markets for inspiration. And of course, he'd clothe the spiders as well. So we get all these incredible fabrics, a lot of velveteen cords, blues, baby blues, denim cod pieces as well. Again, Mick Ronson probably not too keen on all that stuff. But Bowie had the vision. Freddie Barrette helped him realise all that.
I mean, there are great stories in Woody Woodmansey's book, you know, Spider from Mars. And there's one particular altercation where, and I don't know if it's a Barrette creation, it probably is, but Woody said he looked like a deck chair and he just wouldn't wear it. And he was having a massive barney with Bowie. I think it was at the Radio City Music Hall in New York. And he was just saying that, you know, people will come and sit on me. I look like a deck chair. I'm not wearing it. And they were still having a barney when they got on stage.
Really?
And they were doing the first tune. They were at each other. And Woody tells that story so brilliantly. But we mentioned Daniela, who's Freddie Barrette's girlfriend.
So she would wear all his creations. So, you know, but yeah, she had the frame for it. And also, she was an inspiration to to, well, both David and Angie, wasn't she? He was really struck by her short peroxide hair and the kind of shapes shaved into the back of it. And Bowie said later, he said, "Blessed with absolute style, she unwittingly changed so much of how female Britain looked. After my then wife copped a sense of style and a haircut, slipped into a bunch of my photo sessions, dressed basically as Daniela." So right, okay. There's a lot of inspiration going on here. Certainly.
There really is. I wonder where Daniela is now. But anyway, so Freddie Beretti does get name checked in All Young Dudes. Mm. Wendy's stealing clothes from Marks and Sparks, and Freddie's got spots from ripping off the stars from his face. Freddie Beretti.
That's right. And then it gets a little bit sketchy here. So by 1974, Beretti had his own label called Fred of the East End, and he was still doing the odd piece for Bowie, including
odd piece
I'd imagine, including that great powder blue suit that he wears on David Live and other things. But apparently Beretti had a bit of a falling out with main man and Tony DeFreeze.
Would that have been about money, do you think, possibly?
Whoa, I don't know. It's a wild stab in the dark, Mark, yeah. But very possibly.
Okay.
And so he announced his intention. Beretti said to Bowie, "Look, I'm going to go and work for Valentino in Italy." And the two men just lost touch after that.
Yeah, it's and strange then, that, isn't it, really? He went to work in Tel Aviv, didn't he, in 1978. And there was at one point that he'd been gone for so long. I mean, this is really tragic, that his family were putting him on the missing persons register.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was in Rome at some point by the mid-80s. He had a portfolio that he lost in a house fire, apparently. When he died of cancer in Paris in 2001, his family didn't know anything about it until much later on, and it transpired he'd been in Paris for the last 10 years of his life.
Right, okay. And so when he passed away, Bowie paid tribute to him. Naturally, he said, "I am so sad at this particular passing, as he was generally one of the nicest, most talented spirits that I have had the honour of working with. Freddie and I changed our world, small as it was, to what we thought it could be. He lives on for me through his creative genius. I kept all your stuff, Fred. I lost very little. I've got all the best things. I'll look after them for you. God bless." And that, of course, the evidence being David Bowie is.
The A to Z of David Bowie with Rob Hughes and Mark Riley.
F is for fashion, both the song and Bowie's trend setting.
Oh, there's no denying that, mate. Absolutely. So according to co-producer Tony Visconti, it was the last song completed in the Scary Monsters sessions, and its bass line and some of the melody taking inspiration from Bowie's Golden Years.
Yeah, initially developed from a basic riff from Golden Years, using the title Jamaica, which is intriguing.
Right, okay.
Robert Fripp's all over it, of course, a great sort of clipped, funky feel to that. The personnel, you got Bowie on vocals and keyboards, Fripp on guitar, also Carlos Alomar on guitar, and then the trusty rhythm section, George Murray on bass, Dennis Davis drums, and Andy Clark on synthesizer.
Yeah, and also, I mean, one of the kind of legends and one of the songs stored away in a cupboard for so long, Rupert the Riley, which was named after Bowie's car, wasn't
that's right,
it?
Yes.
That's right, isn't it? But that understandably had a beep beep within it, and so that was taken from it. So again, it's a little bit like we've talked about Lou Reed, you know, taking stuff from previous material and recycling it. Well, there's another example of David Bowie doing exactly the same thing there.
Definitely. So he's plundering his own past again in the line People from Bad Homes, which was the title track of an album he did with his protégés, the Astronettes, with Ava Cherry in there in 1973.
Jeff McCormack. Yeah,
absolutely. And then Bowie says the references in the song to the Goon Squad coming to town was a quote here, a move on from the Ray Davis concept of fashion to suggest more of a gritted teeth determination and an unsuredness about why one's doing it in the first place.
Yeah, and David Buckley, in his book, we can see it from here, Strange Fascination, he said that Bowie poked fun at the banality of the dance floor and the style fascists of the New Romantic movement, which is in itself, again, interesting, because we know that it was the New Romantic movement and the Club Blitz that he plundered for the Ashes to Ashes video.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And they were all Bowie fans.
Of course they were, yeah, absolutely. The Bromley contingent and all the rest of that. Bowie did also say that it was a kind of satire or a follow-up, a parody follow-up to the Kinks' dedicated follower of fashion. So you get like two sides of Bowie here. You get the fashionista. He really is interested in how he looks and everything, but at the same time he sees the movements that are going on and sees the vacuity in it and doesn't like all that.
He also, the thing about Bowie is, it seems from the outside that he did like it when people name-checked him and showed kind of deference to him and said that they were influenced by him. But he also didn't like it to be too close, did
yes.
he? You know, we've mentioned Gary Numan before, and I think Bowie thought that he was just skirting a little bit too close to his own oeuvre.
Yeah.
And didn't like it.
Yeah, as long as you could bury it in there somewhere, he was all right with all that. So the video is a great video, shot by David Mallet, who also did Ashes to Ashes, of course, famously, in the New New York club called Hurrah, which was owned by his mate called Robert Boykin. And you've got Bowie on stage, the stage draped in this khaki canvas. Various people in there. Carlos Alomar's on there, guitarist Steve Lowe, and also May Pang, who ended up marrying Tony Visconti.
She did, yes, absolutely. And he performed it at the 1997 Madison Square Garden birthday bash, didn't he, with the Pixies' Frank Black?
Yeah. So it gets to number 5 in the UK, gets to number 70 in the States, which just seems, what a waste. But that in itself was the first chart single Bowie'd had there for 4 years, which just seems incredible.
Seems incredible, yeah. So let's move on to Bowie's fashion sense, which was, we've just talked about it, legendary anyway, so yeah. Off the back of Freddie Beretti and all that. But Bowie said, I do think that fashion is really, really funny. It's so nonsensical, we don't have to do it.
No.
So, I mean, yeah, and do you know what? It is. I remember a great description of art. What is art? It is a good question, isn't it? What is art? And you could say, I'm gonna move that piece of paper from there to there, and that's a work of art as I see it. And you'd be surprised if anybody wanted to buy it.
Yes.
But Brian Eno once said, you know, even your haircut is a work of art, because he described it as something you don't have to do.
Yes.
That's how he simply defined it, which is absolutely brilliant, because if you think about it, you could just not bother with your hair. You could let it grow forever. And when it got to the point where it was getting on your nerves or you were tucking it into your underpants, you just take a scissor to it. But no, you think, I'm going to have my hair cut, I'm going to have it cut in a certain way, even if it's like me and you, just a short back and sides for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And so, so again, Bowie, so ensconced in the world of fashion, but also have got this playful attitude to it.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant, that. And of course, he's interested in clothes and hairstyles from a very early age. So even as a schoolboy, Bowie supposedly started a trend for tapered trousers at his school in Bromley, which we'll have more of in a little bit, by the way. And he used to dye his hair with food colouring, even as an early teen.
I wonder if the food was chocolate, and I wonder if it was a chocolate rinse.
Oh,
I wonder
not.
If his mum was ripping him off even at this stage. Oh. Yeah, so it's worth thinking of, isn't it? But also, he was a mod, you know, with the buzz, wasn't he, and the mod look and all that kind of stuff. And there's that really famous clip of him on the Tonight programme with Cliff Mitchell-Moore, and it is he's representing the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Long-Haired Men, where he seems genuinely upset, doesn't he?
Yeah.
At the treatment that they're getting.
He's talking about all the abuse they get in the street and saying, this just isn't on. And there's a few of them there, isn't there? They're all kind of set like, you know, older choir boys, really. And he's saying, look, I think we all like long hair. We don't see why other people should persecute us because of it. So you get this idea of Bowie already kind of, you know, swimming against the stream here, doing his own thing.
Quite happy to mix it up. And then inevitably there was the Bob Dylan phase, which is kind of anti-fashion, really. I mean, Dylan was very stylish in the mid-60s, wasn't he, with his cap and his suits and all that.
Yeah.
But it was knitted jumpers and curly hair,
which
is a Beckenham art slab and all that kind of
That's
stuff,
right.
wasn't it?
And of course, as the 70s dawned, you've got the famous androgynous look. The dress, the man dress, designed by Mr. Fish, who was an amazing designer that Bowie wore, kind of reclining on the cover of The Man Who Sold the World. And then he's wearing these big boots, the blouses, the voluminous pants, all that kind of stuff, as worn on the back of Hunky Dory, of course.
And then we're getting back into Freddie Beretti territory there. So we're talking about also the bright red boxer boots, which were, you know, the opening section of the Old Grey Whistle Test, where you can just see his foot tapping. He's got those boots on. He just looks so great. Always looks so great. Off stage, I'm a robot. On stage, I achieve emotion. It's probably why I prefer dressing up as Ziggy to being David.
Yeah, and his mum said at the time, I'm not bothered. She says, as long as he remains a boy, I can't see any harm in it at all. And he's going through all these different styles very, very quickly in rapid succession, isn't he? So he's got the Ziggy look. He's got the, you know, the face flash post-Ziggy, Aladdin Sane look, the pirate patch, that great navy and white striped jacket with the enormous lapels that was designed by Freddie Beretti that he wore. There's a famous picture of him and Mick Ronson on a train going up to Scotland wearing that thing. It's a great piece of work.
But you're also mentioning the eye patch there as a sense of fashion, but I think he just had conjunctivitis.
Did he really?
I think so.
Is that right?
I mean, they all call it the pirate look, and he's got that great Futurama or Kent guitar, same thing, and the red dungarees and the eye patch. And I believe that he did have conjunctivitis.
Is that right?
It wasn't an affectation.
That's fine. Great. Well, he turned it into a fashion statement, clearly. It's just wonderful. Got to mention the real one-off things like that famous cobweb bodysuit that was designed by Natasha Kornilov for the 1980 floor show. It sort of had hands on the front, didn't it?
It did. Now, apparently, this had a hand originally on the crotch as well. So it looked like mannequin's hands, didn't it? Placed around the webbing of the costume. Mm. And there was one which was placed over Bowie's groin.
Right.
But it was rejected because it was obviously for the 1980 floor show.
Yeah.
And it might have been NBC or whoever it was who was pulling the strings, but said, that's got to go. But what a great... That would have made it even better, wouldn't it? Just a hand right on the crotch. Almost, again, like an odd codpiece.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Got to mention as well this the white silk suit that was designed by Kanzai Yamamoto with accompanying cloak that he wore on the Aladdin Sane tour, which had this fabulous red and black Bowie, sort of Japanese lettering on there. Down the arm, I think it's spelt David Bowie, and on the back it said it was translated as one who spits out words in a fiery manner.
You see, the David Bowie Is exhibition, and I saw it three times, but I have got a terrible memory. But I remember what was in there, and I do remember looking up. So you just, you know, gazing around at all this wonderful stuff, and then you look up, and it was above eye level. It was kind of on top of an exhibition, and it was a Bowie mannequin with that. The white kimono one, which was a breathtaking piece of work.
One of my favourites of Yamamoto's is that vinyl bodysuit, which had these enormous pants, didn't it? Bowie's kind of great shot of him kind of leaning forward in that.
That's the first thing you see when you go into the exhibition.
Oh, is it?
Well, it was at the V&A anyway.
Right, OK. Moving on, obviously, you know, he's going to Diamond Dogs phase and Young Americans. He's in suits all of a sudden. He's got wearing suits by Yves Saint Laurent. Beretti is doing like the mustard yellow suit, quite a famous shot. And as we mentioned, the pale blue one that adorns the cover of David Live.
I mean, it was around about this time. I remember, this is a good one. So Steve Hanley and I went to Butlins, I think, in Filey, probably around about 1975.
Right.
And at that point in time, people were all starting to wear Oxford bags because Bowie was kind of wearing those high-waistband pants again and all that kind of stuff. You'd often see Bowie wearing a hat, that brown hat with a band around it. And they were selling Bowie hats. So you could buy Bowie hats, but they were made of felt. Right, so they weren't very, very hardy. And so me and Steve Hanley, we were walking around with these hats on, thinking we were the bee's knees. So we didn't have the confidence or the hair to get the Bowie cut. And we weren't going to go around in Japanese print jumpsuits.
No.
But the Bowie hat, we thought, yeah, this is a little statement. We love David Bowie, you know. So we bought them. We went to Butlins, but then it rained. And of course, what happens to felt when it rains?
It collapses.
It collapses. So I think by the end of the holiday, I think the hat's rim was keeping our ears warm.
Oh, do you have photographs?
No.
Oh, what a terrible, terrible shame. We had then kind of move on, don't we, to Station to Station look, which was, you know, almost like an upscale waiter look. It was all very minimal, black and white, monochrome, all that stuff. And the story goes that Bowie had gone to see a production of Cabaret on the West End and seen Judi Dench in that and thought, I love that look, I'm going to take it. So that was the chief inspiration.
And we talk a lot about theatre and how it affected Bowie, but we've not really looked at Cabaret. But if you think about it, when we were talking about The Elephant Man and Bowie's stint on Broadway, he said, I loved it in New York because you'd see all these stars, Al Pacino walking around, this, that and the other. And at one point he does mention you could see Joel Grey from Cabaret, the film, jogging. So Cabaret obviously was a big thing for him as well.
And all the artistic things surrounding Cabaret, the fact it was written by Christopher Isherwood and the rest of that. You
Berlin.
Know, yeah, Weimar Republic and all that kind of stuff. 77, of course, he dresses down a bit. So in keeping with the records themselves, Low and Heroes, Bowie is sort of very much just the casual guy on the street, looking great still, denim shirts and the turned up jeans and all the rest of it. His hair is just like his normal colour.
On the Bing Crosby Christmas special, he's so brilliantly dressed, but he's not outlandish at all. Wouldn't draw attention to anybody, would
No,
he?
Not at all. And then we kind of skip forward to the great comeback of 83 when he's doing Let's Dance and the Serious Moonlight tour. And suddenly he's wearing these really sharp suits, isn't he? He's doing a famous press conference at Claridge's in London. And he has this sort of grey suit on. Look at him, peroxide hair, just like a man reborn.
That bright yellow hair took me aback.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that.
It did too. So not only bright yellow hair, but he had this bright yellow suit as well. So you go and see that tour. Usually he'd be wearing like the bright yellow, canary yellow suit, wouldn't he? Or a lime green one.
Yeah, I don't even know if it was the same suit, but, you know,
different
coloured by lighting. It could have been, I can't remember. I mean, like you, I was at Milton Keynes, but at Milton Keynes, I was right down the front through a lot of the bands, which I didn't want to see, if I'm dead honest. And then when Bowie came on, it just turned into a sprawling mass of idiots coming from the back, just fighting their way to the front. So, and I was with my missus. Otherwise, obviously, I would have just been trading blows for the whole of Bowie's set, probably. But as it stood, we retreated.
Yeah, well, I was at the back. I wasn't pushing forward, though, Mark. I was just standing on the ground.
Good
you know.
Job.
We should mention, but, you know, later years as well, he wore that incredible Union Jack frock coat that was designed by Alexander McQueen for Earthling years. And he and Iman would often sort of feature on catwalks, wouldn't they?
Well, she was quite well known for fashion, wasn't she?
Well, she was a model, wasn't she?
Oh, yeah, of course she was. That'll be right then.
So, you know, 2004, they're doing an advertising campaign for Tommy Hilfiger's spring collection. And Jean-Paul Gaultier called Bowie the absolute rock star, transcended the eras, creating them musically, intellectually and humanly.
The A to Z of David Bowie was written and presented by Rob Hughes and Mark Riley and recorded and edited by Howard Knock. If you'd like to review or rate this podcast, well, that would be much appreciated. In the next episode...
5 years.
Friars Aylesbury.
Surrender Fox. Feathers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.